Hi, this is Stuart Weems and welcome to the Investopoly podcast. My goal is to give you simple, easy to understand strategies, insights and tips to help you master the game of building wealth. And in this episode, I'd like to talk about how to correctly complete a superannuation binding death nomination. Now, before you click pause or close out this podcast, because it sounds like an incredibly boring topic probably, but let me share with you a story before you do that so I can hopefully change your mind. I was reading in the paper recently that a lady by the name of Ashley Petrie was 23 years old and unfortunately was subject to a car accident and lost her life. She nominated her mum, which was she's a single parent, not a lot of money, a pretty basic job as I understand it through the article. Anyway, she nominated her mum as the sole beneficiary of her super. At the time of death, Ashley was actually in a relationship. She was engaged to be married to her 63-year-old fiancé, who was Magistrate Rodney Higgins. They'd been in a relationship for 7 months and living together for 4 of those 7 months. Her fiancé, Rodney, challenged the binding death nomination and the super fund agreed and paid the entire super balance to him. So I think this story goes some way to highlighting some of the pitfalls, pros and cons, considerations that you really need to take into account when completing a binding death benefit nomination to ensure that it's going to your intended beneficiary. So the first thing to point out is that super doesn't form part of your estate. So it doesn't fall or is not covered by, fall within or covered by your will. Essentially, a super fund is like a trust, a normal trust, and no one is entitled to the assets of the trust until the trustee makes an election to distribute those monies, or with super, it's called make a benefit payment. So until the trustee decides to make a benefit payment, you're not really entitled to those monies because they're held on trust for your retirement. As such, it doesn't form part of your estate. That's why you need to complete a will. And then you also, to cover off on your super, you need to complete a binding death benefit nomination. Essentially, the trustee needs to decide who to pay your benefit to. So they've got some discretion in that regard, which I'm going to talk about in a moment. But you can minimize some of that risk by completing, as I keep saying, this death benefit nomination. Now, there's really three types of nominations that you can complete. The first one is a binding nomination. And as the name suggests, the trustee is bound to follow your instructions so long as they don't contravene the superannuation legislation, which is the SIS Act. That's what it's called anyway. Binding nominations can either be lapsing or non-lapsing. In fact, a lot of them are lapsing, which means that they last for up to 3 years. So every 3 years, you've got to complete a new binding death benefit nomination. I guess it, to some degree, it reminds people to update it, make sure it's still current and so forth. There are sometimes non-lapsing binding death benefit nominations, and of course, they don't expire. The next type of nomination is a non-binding nomination. Now, obviously, it provides some guidance to the trustee as to where you'd like your benefit paid. However, ultimately, it's still at the discretion of the super fund. And it's the super fund's trustee that will dictate whether they offer binding or non-binding death benefit nominations. And the last one, which is only really applicable if the super is in pension phase, is a reversionary nomination, which essentially says that, if I pass, I want my pension to revert to my spouse. And there's a few benefits of having a reversionary nomination, including providing certainty, the grandfathering of pension provisions and these sorts of things, but really beyond the scope of this podcast. So who can you nominate? Because this is the really important thing that I think a lot of people don't recognise. So according to the SIS Act, which is the superannuation law, your super must be paid to a dependent. Now, if you don't have any dependents, then your super must be paid to your personal legal representative, which essentially is your executor, or if you don't have a will, your administrator. So essentially, if you don't have any dependents, your super should then be paid into your estate, and it will be dealt with according to your will. So let's look at the definition of who is a dependent. Well, a dependent includes up to three parties. The first one is a spouse. It can be de facto or a married relationship, and it can be opposite sex or same sex partners. The second one is children of any age, which can include stepchildren, adopted children, or anyone that's deemed to be a child of the deceased member under family law. The third is a person that was in an interdependent relationship with the member, which essentially means they're cohabitating and relying upon each other for financial and domestic support. So that's who you can leave your super to. Now, if you don't nominate a dependent, then it can't be paid to a non-dependent. And in that situation where there are no dependents, the super will be paid, as I said, to your personal legal representative, so it goes into your estate, and be distributed according to your will. If you don't have a will, then it will go into your estate, and it will be distributed according to the succession laws in that jurisdiction, so in that state. And those succession laws set out, you know, depending on circumstances, if you have a spouse or if you have children or if you have parents, how and what sort of split or share of the monies go to each of those people. So clearly having a valid will, a valid and current will, means that you don't your estate's not going to be subjected to those succession laws, which may or may not be in line with what you expect or desire. So who should you nominate in your super death benefit nomination? So what's the right answer? Well, if a super is paid to a dependent, then it's received tax-free, so there's no tax associated with it. But interestingly, it has to be a dependent per the definition in the Tax Act rather than the super legislation, so the CIS Act. So this is where it becomes confusing. So you might have to meet the definition of dependent in order to receive the super benefit. But in terms of whether there's any tax or not, you have to fulfill the definition of a dependent under the Tax Act. And so according to tax law, a dependent is either defined as a current or former spouse. So there you go. You can save a bit of money by leaving your super to your former spouse if that's what excites you. A child, but they have to be under the age of 18. And again, anyone in a interdependent relationship, or a person that was financially dependent on the deceased at death. So I guess if you can prove financial dependence, then you can be treated as such under the tax legislation. And the big differential here, I guess, is in super, a dependent is a child at any age. In tax law, a dependent is a child under the age of 18. And I guess those that are listening that have adult children still living at home might probably disagree with that. So really, to avoid your super benefit being taxed, we typically advise our clients to nominate their spouse as the full beneficiary of their super, and that way that there's virtually no chance of any tax being taken out. Now, if you nominate a child as part of your super benefit nomination, just be careful that they're not approaching the age of 18, because if they are, then their benefits are going to be taxed. So how are benefits taxed? In the event they're not paid to a beneficiary, I think it's worthwhile having a discussion about how much tax is payable. Well, it really depends on the components of your super balance. And there's up to sort of three components, if you like, and it's a little bit confusing, so bear with me. There's a tax-free component, there's a taxable taxed element, and then there's a taxable untaxed element. So they're the three components. The tax-free component is really as a result typically of making non-concessional or after-tax contributions. That doesn't attract any tax. The taxable taxed element is really typically accumulates as a result of making concessional or employer contributions, and that's taxed at a flat rate of 15%. And then there's a taxable untaxed element, which is really where the super fund hasn't paid any income tax on income or earnings, and that element is taxed at 30%. That taxed untaxed element, the last one, it tends to be a small proportion of anyone's balance. So really circa 15% tax on a death benefit, plus or minus 5% or so. So of course, avoiding that tax and nominating a dependent as defined in the Tax Act means that you avoid any taxation consequences. So hopefully by now you can understand what Ashley Petrie, the example I gave you at the beginning of the podcast, did wrong. Essentially, she nominated her mother, and her mother is not by definition under the CIS legislation or in fact the tax legislation a dependent. And the super fund has to pay either the money to a dependent or into her estate only when there's no dependents identifiable. And even though Ashley nominated, I think, as I understand it, by a binding nomination, her mother, the trustee has to overrule that if her mother's not either in an interdependent relationship or a financial dependent. And as a result, they did that, and her fiancé received the full super entitlement, which was, I think, circa about $350,000, so it would have made a big difference to the mother's life. The simple way around it is that Ashley should have nominated her personal legal representative, which essentially is her estate, in her super benefit nomination. If she had have done that, it would have gone into her estate, and her will said leave everything to mum, and mum would have received all the benefits. Sure, they would have been taxed because she's not a dependent via the tax definition, but that's fine. At least something's better than nothing, of course. So therefore, that's why care should be taken when completing these nominations, and really getting advice and really thinking through the consequences rather than it just looking like another piece of paper that you need to sign. Now, it's worth mentioning here that self-managed super funds do offer some advantages here with respect to estate planning and death benefit nominations. The first benefit is that binding nominations under a self-managed super fund typically, I mean, every super fund can be different if they want to amend the deed, but typically they're non-lapsing. So it means it gives you more certainty. The other benefit is within a super fund, they don't have to comply with the CIS release rules. Therefore, that means if you nominate a non-dependent and you have a self-managed super fund, the trustee of that super fund can and has to follow that direction. It's only regulated funds, so everything else other than self-managed super funds that are bound to follow the CIS legislation, which means they can't pay to non-financial dependents. So if you have a particular set of circumstances that might create some risk in this regard, then considering having a self-managed super fund is one way to sort of get around it. Now, estate planning seems to be one of those things that the vast majority of Australians just aren't interested in doing, at least doing properly. You know, when I meet a new prospective client, most of them don't have a will. A lot of them don't have current binding death benefit nominations either. Really small, tiny little things that are easy to knock on the head and deal with, that can have far-reaching and unpalatable consequences, can easily be knocked on the head by completing a simple form. You can typically find a binding death benefit nomination form from your super fund's website. Needs to be completed correctly, so be very careful about how you complete it. It typically needs to be witnessed by two adult parties that aren't beneficiaries of your super. And the form typically needs to be mailed into the super fund in order to be registered as a valid and binding nomination. My little job for you this week is to jump online, if you can log into your super fund, Typically, you can find who you have nominated and just check it's correct. Check it's valid. And if it needs to be updated, maybe take the opportunity to do that. It literally will only take you a few minutes, maybe not more than an hour. Okay, that's it for me this week. Until next week, bye for now.